I want to see some lines.
All
right, we got lines. let me do.
We have to keep all of these cold opens.
Oh, absolutely. This is going to be some of the best parts. Let's see.
They're like, oh God, what shit are they going to come up with today?
Yeah, this is definitely going to be the parts that people want to listen to. But anyway, hey. That's it. That's the intro.
You just started with hey. You didn't finish your sentence.
Yeah, that's it. I'm Clark.
I'm Karina.
And this is It's Always Spooky.
Boop, boop, do, do, do.
Yeah.
It's Always Spooky.
So we're doing something a little different today. We couldn't pick one full-length film to do for this week, so we picked two short films.
Well, I don't think it was a matter of, like, we couldn't pick a full-length film. It was just, like, we hadn't picked a film. We'd kind of, like, should we do Hereditary or whatever? But you had texted me, and you were like, have you heard of Milk and Cereal? And you didn't you didn't spell it right.
I didn't. I didn't.
And so I got this weird-ass text message, and I was like, the food?
Yeah, I definitely spelt it like General Mills cereal.
Yeah, like yeah. Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah.
And milk. Like,
yeah.
That's how you sold it to me.
Yeah. Have you heard of this crazy new thing called putting milk in your cereal?
No, I'm a crazy person. I always eat my cereal apart from my milk right next to each other.
Yeah, like that one bitch. On,
get out.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Rose. Oh. Anyways, we're not talking about her. We're talking. So you had mentioned this movie to me, and I was like, oh, okay, I'll check it out. It took me a couple of days, watched it. And then I brought up the idea that since that was an hour long, what if we did a double feature and I pitched an hour long movie to you?
Yeah.
And so that's where we are.
Yeah. Yeah. I always just assume everything in my life is the result of decision paralysis from ADHD. And there was actually some thought that was put into this.
There was a little bit. I mean, yeah. You know, we're still shooting off by the cuff because this is our first podcast and whatever. But like, we did put some thought into it.
Yeah. For clarification, cereal is spelt like.
Yeah. 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 So, yeah. We'll back up. So we're doing a double feature. We're doing Milk and Cereal.
Yes.
That's from. What's the YouTube channel? It's a bad idea,
yeah.
I think. And then we're doing a Host that's on Shudder. And I am actually blanking on who the director of Host is. So I'm going to look it up real quick.
Also, to be spoiler free for the intro, instead of saying that it is spelt like I'll say that it's spelt like serial number.
Hey, there you go.
Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, because I did not know that it was spelt the way that it was spelt. Until I watched it, because I didn't pay attention to the like way the title was spelled.
Sure.
I was like, oh, here's a link. I'm going to watch that.
Did you like where did you find it at?
TikTok.
Oh, OK. I'm just curious, like, was it how was it advertised? Because I'm not on TikTok.
Oh, totally. But somebody posted a TikTok saying that this was like a sleeper hit film of the year. That's just on YouTube, so it's free to watch, and
it literally
it's
just came out.
Like found footage. Yeah, they essentially said that it's like a found footage sleeper hit of the year, and that like it's one of the ones to watch for sure. And it had a link in the caption for the video, so I just like copy pasted it and went for it. Yeah,
it literally just came out. It came out on the 9th, so
yeah,
it came out about 20 days, like 2 weeks ago. So, but yeah, that's what we're talking about. Should we do? Host or Milk and Cereal first? I guess it doesn't really matter.
Yeah. Do you want to just like
flip a coin?
Have Siri flip a coin?
Yeah.
Do you want to say heads is Host?
Tails is Milk and Cereal.
Yeah. It's heads.
It's heads.
It's heads.
That's Host.
Yeah.
Okay.
While Karina is hydrating like a responsible adult, I will say that when I first read Host, I thought that it was I believe it's Korean horror movie that came out like quite a while back.
Yeah.
And when I mentioned that to my manager, she was like, oh, that's a really good horror movie. And I was like, I don't think it's that one, actually. I think it's a different one.
The Korean horror film. It's also called Host.
Yeah.
I don't know if I've heard of it. I was thinking of the creature feature, which is called The Host.
Yeah.
But it's not that either.
Yeah, I told her, I was like, I don't think it's that one, because when I looked that one up, it's well over an hour long.
Yeah,
right. And I think this one is supposed to be an hour. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, is that the one about the Zoom call? Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? And then I watched it and I was like, this is fire.
It's fucking good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I looked up the director. The director is Rob Savage. And this I'll do a bit of trivia later about him. But this... this was actually filmed over the pandemic, and so it's kind of has the same pandemic vibe, where this group of friends, in order to stay connected, they have like what I'm assuming are like weekly Zoom call check-ins. You know, hey, let's hang out, let's play a board game, let's play Truth or Dare or whatever. And it's kind of like their socialization, because they can't do it during the pandemic. And for this most recent one, I can't remember all their names off the top of my head. I think there's
Haley.
There's Haley's the main girl. There's Gemma is her neighbor. I think there's a girl named Emma there too.
Yeah.
There's Redania, which is the girl who lives with her boyfriend. There's Carolyn, who lives with her dad.
Teddy.
And then there's Teddy, who's with Teddy's new girlfriend.
Yeah, I think her name's like Jenny.
Jenny. Yeah. Jenny's right. And I think that's it. I want to say that's everybody. And then, you know, Salen.
Yeah.
Sailor?
Salen.
Salen, yeah.
Yeah.
The medium. Haley decides that for their weekly Zoom call, they're going to do like a seance. Haley's been doing like, she maybe did a couple of seances before the pandemic, because I'm assuming, because Salen says something like, this is the first time I've ever done this over a Zoom call.
Yeah.
Right. Typically you do seances in the room with other people.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder if that's kind of because like there's more power in numbers. And it's probably also for like a, so you can verify that what you're seeing is real, because, you know, if you're just sitting in the dark by yourself, your brain will start to play tricks on you. But if there's somebody else who's seeing the same things as you, then it kind of validates like your reality.
Yeah. Yeah. For the better or worse.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
This is really a good thing if somebody else sees the same shit that you're seeing.
Exactly. Or if somebody hypes up stuff that might not be there and kind of like invalidates the experience. Yeah.
No, 100%. And it, just for that 60-second recap there, you know, they decide to do the seance. Obviously shit goes sideways, and it's kind of like a, if you've seen the movie Unfriended, it's a very similar vibe where, you know, it's just a bunch of friends get together, petty shit starts to happen, and then, you know, slowly the numbers start to dwindle. But I'm not going to tell you in what order.
Yeah.
That ain't what we're here for. Well, at least not now.
Not yet.
I would say that's like a pretty decent recap without spoiling it.
Yeah.
It's just really, it's just about like a group of friends just trying something new on a Zoom call. And obviously bad things happen because we like horror.
Yeah. You know, like it, some people got into sourdough bread making during the pandemic.
Right.
Other people decided to summon people from the afterlife over Zoom.
To have fun. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I will tell you, this movie did ring a bit true for me, because during the pandemic, I myself also did this. I didn't do seances over Zoom, but like, I had weekly, if not daily, like video chats with friends that later became like a coven of sisters that would just like every single day we would do check-ins. And I still hang out with those people virtually like every single day. I even did like several D&D campaigns like purely virtually like over the pandemic. So it really hit home, like, to me, this movie.
Yeah, that was a much healthier approach to the pandemic than what I took.
What did you do?
Well, okay, so I balanced, right? Mm-hmm. Everything in life's about balance.
Absolutely.
And I drank a lot of tequila, but I balanced that out with a lot of hiking until they decided to shut down the forest. Then it was just a lot of tequila. But,
oh, God.
But I was working from home at the time, and I was really fortunate to have a job where I didn't lose any pay at all.
Yeah, I got you.
And so I would like, quote, take work meetings while I was like up at Mirror Lake on Mount Hood.
Oh, I remember you telling me this. Yeah, which is a baller move, by the way.
Yeah.
I've been noticing like just reading news articles lately of people, mostly they've been labeled as Gen Zers, that take these like staycations where they like take their laptop with them and they just go, I'm gonna work, but I'm gonna work from wherever the fuck I want.
Exactly. If I'm given the task to like create a fake advertisement for a product, I'm gonna do it while I'm hiking.
Right.
Yeah.
100%.
Yeah. Like, you know what? The battery life on this thing is insane. I can record while I'm going on a hike.
That's the way to do it, honestly. I spent almost all of the pandemic unemployed. So I spent a lot of it like raising our dog and like being the homemaker and like getting the big, you know, stimulus checks from the government.
Hell yeah.
Holy shit. I paid off so much debt with those stimulus checks.
Nice.
Yeah. Thanks, Biden.
Yeah. Should we do like favorite scenes right off the bat?
Yeah. Let's do it.
For me, my favorite scene was... oh, I actually don't have it off the top of my head because there was quite a bit that I really liked in this movie. Mm-hmm. It's not often that a movie is good enough at setting up the vibe that a jump scare will actually get me. And I was got a couple times in this movie.
Yeah.
And I would say my favorite scene actually would be there's a very brief period. I can't remember whose screen it is that gets focused on, but there's like the camera pans, and when it's panning super quickly, you can just see feet hanging in the background.
Yeah, it's Carolyn. Yeah.
Yeah. And that one didn't scare me. That like didn't get me at all, but right. I was just like, oh, this is actually, I understand why this is set up the way that it is. And it was like a really good way to tie in something that had happened earlier before it's explained by Saylan.
Yeah.
Where it was like, if you even looked away for a fraction of a second right there, you wouldn't have seen it and it wouldn't have actually like made any sense. Mm-hmm. But that was a good like build scene for me where I was like, okay, the vibe's actually getting pulled together.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. I really like that scene. My favorite part about that scene personally is when like they're pumping Carolyn up, right? Saylan's not there, right? They're all hearing weird shit. And so Carolyn's like, okay, I'm going to go get the selfie stick, right? And she goes and she puts it up there. And then I think before she goes to get the selfie stick, she starts to go up the ladder, right?
Yeah.
And then she goes, fuck this. And she goes back down the ladder.
Yeah.
Like an actual fucking human being.
Yeah.
Goes,
yeah.
Oh, I'm not going up there. Are you fucking kidding me? No, I'm going to get the selfie stick. I'm going to
exactly
do a little 180.
A human being and a millennial who's like, yeah, how can I get as close to this as possible while being as far away as possible?
Exactly, right.
And it was such just a good, like, she pans, you see it, she pans away. When she turns around, it's not there anymore.
Yep.
And
it's like all the people see it. Like, everybody on the Zoom call sees it.
Exactly.
And it was like, they saw it, but they didn't really get it. Like, they saw something, but they didn't get enough of a glimpse of it to really, like, get what it was, right?
Yeah.
Like, the audience can quite obviously see what it was and tie that together. But I think a lot of the characters like obviously saw something, but they couldn't really understand what it was.
I do have a question because if this is what I think it is, it could change my favorite scene.
Okay.
So right before Saylan's camera cuts out.
The first. Yeah.
Yeah.
The second time when the books fall over.
Is it books? I don't remember if it's the first or the second,
because the first time she leaves, right, she leaves the call because her DoorDash order gets there.
Yeah.
And then the second time it's when the internet cuts out, and right before the internet cuts out, it looks like a bunch of boxes fall over.
Okay, so I didn't know what happened when the like boxes or books or whatever fell over. To me, it looked like a noose had like flown through, and I didn't know if that was the intention. Mm-hmm. And if it was, because that ties together to the like, it's this hanged person that was created by Gemma.
Yeah.
Then that could be my favorite scene because that was just like a quick, you wouldn't even know it.
Absolutely.
Like you'd maybe have to do frame by frame to even determine that that is what that is.
Yeah.
But
no,
I
agree with you.
Yeah. It looked like a noose. And so for me, I was like, oh shit.
Could be. I will say the reason why I say it's boxes is because I typically watch these movies and then I watch a bunch of breakdowns and like, you know, other videos. And I watched FoundFlix's video about this movie. And I think the narrator in that show he went frame by frame in that scene. And that's literally what he said, which was just like, oh, it was just like some boxes.
Oh, okay.
I think it would have been really cool if we would have also seen Saylan die, because I think she definitely would have been a victim in there because she was there for the seance.
Yeah.
At least I think so. Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I feel like she would have been just as likely to be a victim as, what's his nuts, Teddy?
Yeah, absolutely. Right, yeah. For that exact reason, right? Even if, like, Teddy wasn't there for most of it and Salem wasn't there for a couple of little blips, but they were still there for, like, Gemma's story. Actually, I don't know if Teddy was, which makes that kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Teddy wasn't there for Gemma's makeup story, whatever, but he was there for, like, the initial seance.
Yeah, he was just there to, like, light the candle.
He was there with the candle, so yeah. I guess the candle's what keeps you in the room or whatever. But
yeah.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah, I think it would have been a cooler scene if instead of Salem's internet just cutting out, because they talk to her on the phone later.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they eventually get a hold of her again, and she's like, I'm sorry, my internet's really shitty, I can't get it back. And Haley's like, okay, well, we just need your help because, like, you know, Carolyn's really scared right now, and so we just need you to talk us through it. But I think it would have been really cool if, although in hindsight, you know, it would have been cool if Salem would have died in that scene. If, like, we would have just seen, like, similar to when Haley's body gets, like, pulled backwards and then through the door. Like, it would have just been cool to just see Salem just go into the darkness.
Yeah.
And then maybe them hear, like, a neck snap or something like that just, like, kind of proved. Or, like, would have been even cool if she, like, dropped from a noose in the screen. But anyways.
Yeah, because she really does kind of just have, like, a... She has loose ends. We don't really know what happens there. And she's also the person that's orchestrating the whole thing.
Yeah.
So it's interesting for her to be the one that we don't know what happens.
Yeah. I mean, maybe that was just a way to set up a sequel, but, or it was just purely a loose end. Or maybe she just died off screen and we just, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's like Jenny died. Like, that, you know, there were other tertiary characters that died that were connected to this. So, yeah. My favorite scene is kind of, it's connected to your favorite scene, because my favorite scene is when the group finds out that the whoever is contacting them is this mask that Gemma has created.
Yeah.
It's like the moment when Salem is like, well, Gemma, you know, this, you said this was your friend. Like, do you think your friend's trying to contact you? And they all had to be like, okay, we fucking lied. She made a joke and made it up, and you just hear Salem just go, guys, I told you, like, I told you not to disrespect them. Like, if, you know, essentially, if you just made up something, then anything can come through and wear that mask. And, like, hopefully it's just another spirit. And, you know, if we're lucky, like, it's just another spirit. And Carolyn goes, what if we're not lucky?
Yeah, if we're lucky.
What if we're lucky? And, like, this is like, well, I don't know. Like, it could easily be a demon. Like, it could literally be anything. You have no idea. So let's just cut this off. We're just going to shut this shit down real quick.
Yeah.
And that was definitely, like, that's my favorite scene. Not the scariest scene for me, but definitely my favorite. Just kind of that realization. I think it's mostly just Carolyn's, like, reaction too, of just like, we're, like, fucked.
Yeah.
Like, because it's quite obvious at this point that, like, the stuff that they're seeing isn't like a candle being blown out or like a light knock on your door or whatever, right? It's like people being dragged across the floor. I don't know if that thing with Emma happened by that point, where she was, like, running away and then got dragged in the air and then dropped on the ground.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that had happened by then. But they'd, like, seen the shit in the attic and, like, they, like, several things had happened by this point. That was definitely, like, freaking them out.
Yeah. I don't think my most scene had happened at that point, which was when the face filter was on in the middle of the room.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, ew.
Oh,
ew.
That was so scary.
Yeah.
I was wondering how they got that to work.
Yeah.
Just because of, like, how, like, that is a very, actually, maybe that was, because I just have Faceless Demon Jack, so I'm kind of curious if that was my, like, favorite scene.
Yeah.
But I just really like it as just, like, you know, those filters only really can work on a certain, like, algorithm.
Yeah.
That wouldn't just be in your room, just, like, in a random, like, living room. Like, it would have to be on, like, an animal or a person or whatever. So I found that to be very unsettling.
Yeah. Yeah, that was, like, so the setup for me watching this was, I got home yesterday and went upstairs and Nick was playing Oracle of Ages or something like that.
Oh, nice. That's a good one.
And so, like, he's playing that and I'm like, oh, whatever, I'm just gonna watch this movie. And so I throw in my AirPods, noise cancel it, put it on my laptop and full screen it, and it's maybe 10 inches in front of my face. And it gets to that point and I pause it and I'm just like, ew, 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 ew. And Nick's like, what? And I was like, this is actually getting me. And then I hit play again.
Yeah, unpause.
Yeah.
So what was your scariest scene?
Let me see what I had texted you, because I was kind of giving you a little bit of a play-by-play.
Yeah.
There were a couple that I was like, okay, this is getting me a little bit. But honestly, it's kind of a tie. So there's a point where they're panning with a flashlight. Who is it that's panning with it?
With a flashlight?
With a flashlight. Yeah, it's...
At what point in the movie?
It's pretty late in it.
It might be Teddy then. It might, because he's like using his phone. It's either Teddy or it's Emma.
Well, because there's a flashlight that ends up like the bulb explodes, like it's like an old flashlight. Oh, and I want to say it is Teddy.
It's Teddy. Yeah. I think so.
But at one point he's panning with the flashlight, and there's just a face in it. And
that fucking demon that they show, that yeah, show like twice, like, holy yeah, God.
That actually scared the fuck out of me. And then at the very end, the scene that's tied with it is at the very, very end, right before it like goes to just a computer screen or like the Zoom screen.
Yeah.
It shows that face again. Mm-hmm. And it's just like a really quick thing. And I expected it to already be done at that point. And so, like, that face shows up, and it scared the fuck out of me. Like, I actually, like, jumped enough that it scared Nick while he was playing his video game, and he wasn't even watching it.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was, like, the reveal of the demon.
Yeah.
Like, and especially, like, the little shadow sneak that they did at the very, very, very end.
Yeah.
When I'm assuming, like, Gemma and Haley get got. I kind of wish we would have seen their deaths on screen, but...
Yeah.
It's, like, when they, like, get... They see him at the end of the hallway when they're taking the pictures with the Polaroid. And then I'm pretty sure he just like gets them. Like it just cuts after that point.
Well, who is it that jumps out of the window?
Emma.
Yeah. Okay.
Emma, the one with the face filters.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's when she's like, it was really sad because she's like, you know, it's just her and Gemma, because everybody else is dead and Teddy's not on the call, and Haley just got dragged through her door, and Gemma's like, oh fuck this, I'm putting my mask on, I'm just gonna run. Her house is literally just like two doors down from mine, or yeah, two blocks or whatever. And Emma at this point is just like in her room, and she's under her blanket for like an extended period of time, and she's like, Gemma, please don't leave me, because she knows as soon as she goes out of like Wi-Fi range into cellular range that her, you know,
yeah,
whatever.
Oh yeah, connection's gonna get
her connection's
bad.
Gonna be shit, and she's not gonna be there on the call anymore. And I think that's the point when Emma dies, right? Because she starts hearing stuff. She gets up. I think like her blanket gets taken from her or something like that. And she gets up and she like tosses it and creates like the little silhouette.
Oh yeah,
right?
that was fucked too.
She's actually she's brave enough to like run out the door after that point, because like I would just fucking piss myself and die of a heart attack.
I would just accept that's my end.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I'm pretty sure she gets out the door, and then I think it picks her up and it throws her out the window, and she dies, you know, when she hits the table outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was
a good scene.
It was really good.
This is a good scene. My scariest scene, honestly, is Redania's death.
Yeah.
It's when like her boyfriend falls from the fucking ceiling, because they do a really good like kind of slow burn to this, where like her and her boyfriend are already having trouble because they moved in together during lockdown. So there's like this tumultion, and then he goes into his room and fucks off.
Yeah.
And you don't see him again. And I watched this movie a third time just to really see if like they had any kind of shots, because Redania kind of stays in this position where you never see him leave.
No.
He never comes out of the bedroom. He never goes to the door, because her front door is right there, so you can see it.
Yeah.
Like he never leaves. But I think there is a point at which when she goes to the bathroom, right, and she takes the laptop with her, I think there's a moment where you can see him like hanging, like you just see his feet.
I think
dangling.
So. Yeah.
And like from that point, from when she comes back from the bathroom to the point where she dies, he's just on the ceiling that whole time.
Yeah.
And she just never notices him, because she never turns around again. She never leaves that room. And so that's like the scariest scene for me, is when they're trying to figure out what to do. And I don't remember what Redania is doing. She's doing something and her like stove catches fire.
Yeah.
Right. There's stuff happening in the background and she's muted it. And they're like trying to get her attention. Redania. And she comes over and she's like, what? And her boyfriend hits the
yeah.
ground and she turns around and like the entity gets her and kills her right after that point. And
yeah.
Like, oh man, that one got me so good.
That was really good. Ooh, the, I believe it's Carolyn who has the filter of herself, like the background.
Walking in and out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then you just see her head popping up as it's getting smashed into her desk yeah. over and over and over again. Yeah. That was a really good one.
That was a really
one
good
too.
One. I liked that one too, because that one also had a nice little preamble where they were like, huh, where's Carolina? Oh, there she is. Right. And then it's like her screensaver, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh, it's just her screensaver. And they get that just one little blip of her smashing her face. And they're like, whoa. What the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Right? And it takes like a couple of minutes after that point where they were like, she actually dies.
Yeah.
And holy shit. You know, she had to do all that makeup herself.
Too. Oh, for sure.
Isn't
yeah.
so cool.
I wonder what, like, and I'm sure we'll get into this with like the fun facts and trivia and everything. I'm curious what the budget is, because I know what the budget was for Milk and Cereal.
Yeah.
And I imagine it's got to be somewhat similar, except Shudder has a lot more money. So I would assume if Shudder produced this, that
yeah, it was
it
a Shudder original.
Has,
yeah.
But a couple of honorable mention scenes also. That blanket turning into a silhouette, as well as the cabinets blowing open, the Haley getting pulled back into like the dark room.
Yeah,
there
I
is
like that one.
So much of this film that is like callbacks to Paranormal Activity, and it's callbacks to Paranormal Activity when it wasn't overdone yet.
Absolutely.
Like, because I don't care who you are, if you went to the theater for Paranormal Activities 1 through 3, you were terrified in
oh
the
my.
Theater.
Oh
like,
my god! Yeah.
Like terrified because. Mm-hmm. At that point, we hadn't really seen, we had seen like found footage stuff, but we hadn't really seen like security camera, like in-house security camera footage of like something like that happening. And
that
we hadn't seen effects like that really at that point.
Absolutely.
And so that, those movies had me on edge the whole time. And I think that this was just enough of that. And it was like done well enough
yeah.
that it put me right back in that spot where it was like, oh shit, I'm in the theater watching Paranormal Activity 1 again.
Absolutely. And no, I 100%.
yeah,
yeah, and I think it's probably just because there's a level of like authenticity to both of these movies, right? I think in both, I want to say in both Host and in Paranormal Activity, there was a lot of like improv
yeah.
that was done where you had like a general subject that you needed to you needed to inquire about, but the rest of it was like up to you, like the way that you handled conversations or the little like tidbits and dialogue that you would have was just completely like whatever you came up with on the spot, and you just like recorded that.
Yeah, yeah, it was very well done. I was really impressed. I haven't had a like Paranormal Activity-esque movie get me like this in years.
Yeah, and for this to be such a like low budget indie-esque
yeah.
film that was really like a sleeper. I mean, I guess if you want to, we should get into some of the trivia for this.
Ooh, yeah.
I did look up because I couldn't find it on IMDb. For Host, it looked like the budget was $100,000. Some of the other trivia that I had. I mean, obviously, we already talked about how Host was filmed over the COVID pandemic. But another interesting piece of information that I found out is that the director, Rob Savage, actually played a prank during the pandemic on his coworkers, where he pretended like he was being haunted by a paranormal entity. And after he played this prank, it was super elaborate, he actually hired most of the people that were on that call to star in this movie. So that was also super interesting too. I watched a really interesting video recently that showed kind of the original Zoom call, and it was kind of cool to be like, oh look, Gemma, oh Haley.
Now that I think about it, the $100,000 budget actually makes a little bit of sense, because mm-hmm. when I think about it, they had to like individually have all of the different things for all of these different effects in their apartments.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, it makes sense. That would cost not a ton of money to produce something like this, but it would cost quite a bit to be able to like provide all of that to each individual person.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And to probably also pay them for their time on top of that, right? I mean, unless all of them were doing it for free.
I love that that is the result of a prank and that milk and cereal is what we're covering next.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
Oh, fate. Thank you, Sam.
Yeah.
No, I mean, the trivia that I came up with, 100 grand budget, I already brought up that it was filmed during lockdown and that... all of the actors that were hired from the original Zoom call that were coworkers, they also did all of their own stunts, all of their own makeup, you know, all of their own like video editing. Like they did all of that stuff together, like or individually.
So cool.
And then they probably sent it in and then they edited it all together, which yeah. I think is just fucking nuts.
That is it. Like there's a lot that goes into, you know, set design and special effects and production in general for movies. And that can't be understated.
Yeah.
But for actors to each individually have to do all of that themselves, like that's a pretty impressive feat.
That's a lot. I mean, could you imagine? Now you get to pad out your resume.
Yeah.
I'm a makeup artist. I'm also a special effects artist. I'm also an editor. I'm a director. I'm a...
yeah.
You just get to book all that shit on your resume now.
Each individual one of us created a demon in our house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
How many people can say that?
Yeah.
I'm just looking on the IMDb page to see if I see any other trivia that looks interesting. Although this movie was scripted, the cast was allowed to improvise. For instance, the moment when Haley sneezes and the cast reacts to it was not planned.
Okay.
Parts of the script were redacted so that the cast didn't know what would happen throughout. Certain things were pre-recorded and played back for the cast to get their genuine reactions.
Ah.
Kind of interesting. In order to get the cast worked up before certain takes, the director would make them watch horror movie clips. True to the free Zoom membership, Haley's group chat with the others lasts the duration of an hour, coinciding almost entirely with the film's duration, which I think is part of the reason why they tried to keep it there.
Yeah.
You know, was that it like would run out. It would like time out at the end.
Yeah.
Every scene was shot on iPhones that were taped to laptops.
Nice. All right.
That's fucking awesome. That's
dope.
Hilarious.
Yeah.
It's got a body count of 8. Shall we count it? It'd be Haley, Gemma, Emma, Caroline, Redania, Redania's boyfriend, Teddy, and Jenny.
Yeah. Yeah, the only person who doesn't die is Salen.
Is Salen. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Carolyn's dad.
Oh, yeah.
Although maybe he was... the body in the attic, but I don't think so.
Yeah, what happened?
That was, I know, that's the plot hole, honestly. Yeah. Like I don't know where Carolyn's dad went.
Yeah.
But like, I mean, in the beginning of the movie, she did talk about how he likes to go outside and like take his clothes off and wander the streets. So I don't know. Like
maybe he
just did that. And yeah. She was just on the call so she could go get him.
Yeah. He was a little too randy of a guy to not show up again.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah.
Yeah. the only other trivia that's on this page is just that the demon appears only to 3 characters in its true visage: Haley, Gemma, and Teddy.
Yeah.
Everybody else, including Emma, like it just shows up as like a figure or the faceless filter or the footprints on the floor or like.
Oh my God! The flower footprints was that was cool.
It was definitely a nod to Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
I think all we've got left is just ratings.
Oh, yeah.
So my rating, I didn't put down my weapon.
I also just want to point out that this episode is also a little bit special because I think this is the first time that I'm raw dogging it. I don't have anything written down. The only thing that I had written down was the text message thread between you and I of like, ew, and like that. But otherwise, I have no notes for either of these. And I think you actually have notes this time, don't you?
Well, I just have like, I did the most basic of shit where I just like wrote down my fave and my rating. And
I love it.
Like, it was just literally so that I wouldn't forget, but I still forgot the faceless demon Jack.
Yeah. What we're learning is we both are just going to say, fuck it and do what feels good.
I'm trying really hard to like start using a planner in a way that makes sense, but I'm really bad at it. So, I think for my weapon, because I laughed so hard when it happened, I'm choosing the wine bottle.
That was so funny.
I fucking love that scene so much. I thought that that's how she was going to go out.
I thought so too.
I was like, are you fucking serious?
It could have ended there, and I would have thought that was gold.
to call back, for if you haven't seen the movie, Gemma runs to Haley's apartment to go help her after she thinks she's been killed by this demon, and so she climbs, she breaks into her house, she like breaks the window, and she climbs through, and she's looking around the kitchen, and just a wine bottle just flies out from fucking nowhere and just like clocks her in the head and knocks her ass over, and you think, oh shit, that's the end of Gemma.
That's it. She's gone.
That's all she wrote.
It is so perfect too. Like, the acting in that part was incredible, because it's like that wine bottle is out of nowhere and it's lights out. Yeah. She is down.
Out. Yeah, and then she like does this weird move where she like pulls the laptop down onto the floor so that you can see what's going on. And she goes to get up, and then all the cabinets fly open, Paranormal Activity style, right?
Yeah.
So I'm doing the flying wine bottle.
Love it.
My weapon of choice. So for rewatchability, I've watched this movie more times than I care to admit, seeing as it's only an hour. So I gave it a 4.5 flying wine bottles out of 5.
Yeah.
Scareability. I mean, I personally, because I've seen so many found footage movies, I found this movie incredibly funny. There were definitely moments that like got my heart thumping, but I didn't find it super scary. So I gave it a 3.5 out of 5 flying wine bottles. And then for quality, I gave them a lot of props just because like this was very much an on-site movie. I gave it a 4 out of 5.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't done in a studio. It's not super polished. Like, I'm willing to give it a lot of leeway because of that. And for what it was, like, I found it to be very well done.
Yeah, absolutely. For my weapon, I'm going to choose, I think for my weapon, it's actually going to be a very haphazardly used Zippo lighter. And
good goddamn God.
Yeah.
Who would ever use a fucking lighter to be able to see? You're not seeing shit with that.
In a barn. Like, with straw.
I'm thinking of Phasmophobia.
Yeah, right? Yeah, which, if you don't have your brightness turned up on Phas, it feels like you're using a lighter. But that scene, good.
I really did like the music box in the background.
Yeah.
That definitely was really funny.
That was a good touch.
It was good.
Especially since I don't believe any of the rest of their special items were brought up again.
No.
I think it was just the music box.
Yeah, they showed them all at the beginning when Salem was like, do you have all your tokens? But that was it.
Yeah, all their special items. I'm like, I'm in video game mode. Yeah, for my rating, it'll be a haphazard Zippo. So for scariness, like, everybody's aware that for the most part, I consume horror mostly in written format, but I watch a lot of scary movies, but I tend to not steer into found footage ones as much.
Yeah.
And I think it's because I do fall into that, like, I feel like I've seen this over and over. I feel like I've seen this, like, that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is a rare opportunity where it's not something that I think I probably would have chosen to watch on my own, and it definitely got me. Like, there are definitely parts of this movie where it was like, even the cabinets flying open, it put me right back in that theater seat watching Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
And it didn't feel like it was something that was overdone. It felt like something that was just the right thing at the right moment, and the timing in it is just wonderful.
I really like it because it's very concise.
It is.
Like every scene in that movie, I think there's only one gratuitous scene where they all take a bathroom break.
Yeah.
It's probably the only one where you're like, I think even Found Flix brings it up where it's like, okay, we're padding out runtime right now.
Yeah.
You have no more fluff that you could put in this movie.
Exactly.
Which they definitely could have. I think they could have included other scenes to kind of like bring that out. It did, like the bathroom scene did kind of make sense because like,
yeah.
We've definitely done that in video calls before. At least I know I have.
Yeah.
So like,
and they're drinking. Like it's
right.
It makes sense. But I think that also not having a lot of padding really lent itself to me getting worked up enough that like some of these scenes actually got me.
Yeah, it's some good tension in it for sure.
And it felt so nice. Like I love being scared, and it happens so infrequently at this point that this was a really welcome surprise.
Right. You're just like, oh, okay. Actually, this was fucking baller.
Yeah. And I'm going to watch it again and laugh at myself, but it was good. So I'll say for scariness, I do tend to prefer horror in a little bit more of a heady sense. I'm not the biggest like jump scare person or anything like that. But it did frighten me a few times. So I'm going to say for scariness, I'm going to give it a 4.
Nice. Okay.
It's not something that's going to linger with me, but it did get me.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So 4 haphazard zippos. For quality, I'm going to say, I'll kind of say the same thing for quality, where given the circumstances and given that every actor had to do their part individually to make this happen,
right,
aside from just acting, I'll give quality like a 5 out of 5.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, and that's also like giving them props where it's due. And then for rewatchability, like I'm planning on watching it either tonight or tomorrow because I want to see a few things again and see if like, see if there's stuff that I missed, see if I go like frame by frame, if there's a few things that like clear up a little bit,
yeah.
Like the Salem parts and like that sort of stuff. So, and it's also now the length of an episode of something on TV.
Absolutely.
So like I could watch it again easily.
That's what's so nice about it. It's super digestible.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'll say for rewatchability, I'll give it a 5. Why not? And
go watch it.
Yeah.
Go fucking watch it.
Go watch it.
It's on Shudder. If you can't get it on Shudder, I don't know what to tell you. You could probably... you didn't hear it from me, but you could pirate it.
Yeah. You also didn't hear it from me, but if it isn't available in like your region for some reason, because a lot of streaming services only have certain things in certain areas, you don't... You know, nothing's stopping you from using a VPN to pretend like you're somewhere else.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Eventually, maybe one day we'll get sponsored.
Ooh. Yeah. The coming at you, Proton VPN, or no, it's Proton Browser. It's NordVPN.
NordVPN. There's a bunch of them now. Now that it's become more popular.
Yeah, I'll sell out to one of you guys. Just give me money.
One day. Money. All right. Shall we move on?
Yeah. So in the essence of a prank turning into a horror movie, the next one that we're going to cover is Milk and Cereal. And to give kind of a brief summary of this movie, I would say that there is a duo of like really close friends who have a very successful prank channel on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
And it is one of their birthdays. And to celebrate, they want to pull off the best prank that they've had so far. And eventually lines get blurred on, is this still a prank or is this real life?
Yeah.
And
yeah, that's a really good way to phrase it, actually. I really like that because, yeah, it definitely starts as like it's two content creators who are like constantly trying to outfox each other almost.
Yeah.
Like, they, like it almost seems like their channel is that they're trying to outprank each other, you know, and so they're trying to prank one of the content creators, like their friend group is. And yeah, like you were saying, like the prank is, it kind of goes a little bit too far than what you would might consider a prank. And so then you start asking yourself like, wait a second, are we actually playing a joke on each other or are we committing like crimes?
This was, as I had said prior, this was a movie that I found as a recommendation from a TikTok.
Right.
And I had absolutely no idea what I was going to watch. It was just hailed as being this like diamond in the rough as far as like a movie for this year. And it was available for free on YouTube, and I was like, fuck it, why not?
Yeah.
I will say, like, if you are somebody who digests any amount of, like, content creators, if you're somebody who watches a lot of YouTube, if you're somebody who's been, like, a YouTube watcher or a content creator watcher over the last, like, 15 years, like, this is something that you're going to be really familiar with, and it's something that's going to easily connect with you and take you on a ride.
And it's best to go in completely blind. Like, absolutely. I know there are trailers out there that you can watch for this movie, and I cannot stress more how, like, it's only an hour long.
It
is. Just go fucking watch it. Like, don't look up anything about it. Like, I would even go as far as to say, because I didn't do this, don't even go watch anything else on their channel.
No.
Like, I really enjoyed going and watching stuff on their channel after I watched this movie. Because some of their shit is super duper funny. It's kind of a funny, like, almost Jordan Peele-esque funny, because they're super into, like, comedy skits and stuff. But then they just have all of these little salt and pepper, like, short form horror stories.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't know anything about them. I went into this completely sight unseen.
Right. And the director, producer, writer, main character, like, he basically did everything. Curry Barker. I'm almost wondering if it's, like, a relation to Clive Barker.
Yeah.
Clive.
Yeah. It was a really incredible, incredible find. And I can't remember, it's Curry Barker and then something Tomlinson.
Cooper Tomlinson.
Yeah. Cooper Tomlinson.
Which Cooper was the other character.
Yeah.
Seven. He played Seven.
Yeah. Let's just get into favorite scenes.
Let's fucking do it.
Yeah. Cause I really don't want to give any more context to this.
No.
At this moment, we're going to give spoilers. Go watch it before you listen to this.
Don't fucking listen past this point if you haven't watched this movie, unless you really don't care about spoilers. Like, I'm all for that. Like, most of the time, I really don't give a shit about spoilers, but, like, this movie is so much better if you don't know what's coming.
Absolutely.
I feel like my favorite scene for this movie was definitely Milk's monologue that he does, like, with his blank mask, when he's like, what do you mean you don't like it? Like, he's just sitting there and he's like doing all of these different, like, monologues about,
yeah.
I'm trying to remember exactly what the original subject was. I think it was just about, like, trying to conform and, like, be a normal person, but, like, he wasn't normal. Like, he obviously wasn't normal, and just, like, just constantly, like, snapping back to this. Like, he's like, I think it's when he's torturing Lara.
Yeah.
Right. And
yeah.
He's like talking to her about, like, oh, you know, you thought you had it so good. And, like, I really like this mask because, you know, you can still see my face through it, but it just obscures my features. And, like, I found that to be not only, like, my favorite scene, but also kind of the scariest scene. I'll probably come up with another scariest scene. But it was really like the dial up to 11, like those several points where you just see Milk just, like, grimacing at the camera. Like, there's so many scenes like that where I was like, good fucking God.
Yeah. I'm going to say, for me, my favorite scene is when they buy the not fake gun with the blanks in it.
At the very beginning.
Out of the van. Because I genuinely thought that was a Chekhov's gun situation where it was like, oh, those aren't going to be fakes. Like, what's going to happen is they're going to try to go pull off this prank. They're actually going to shoot that person. And then, like, shit's going to hit the fan and it was going to pan out in a totally different way.
It was going to be like, I know what you did last summer situation where now we got to, like, hide the body.
Exactly. And I genuinely thought that was the route that they were going to go.
Mm-hmm.
And it took a totally different turn from there.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but from the moment that I saw Milk's character, I knew he was the bad guy.
So I had that feeling too.
I knew the moment I saw him. I was like, that dude's a fucking psychopath. Like,
yeah. And I didn't, the thing was, so I think I've been in internet culture enough that, like, there is a thing about especially prank content creators where they just kind of look off.
Yeah.
Even as goes so far as to say, like, Mr. Beast, he looks kind of dead inside. Like,
oh,
it's like 100%. There's just, like, certain content creators where it's just like they I mean, you have to be a little bit, a little bit wired strange to be able to have that much of a desire for attention and for publicity and like for all that kind of stuff. Like, I feel like that's just kind of an element of it. And so I couldn't tell if he was trying to really lean into acting as a content creator or if it was, oh yeah, this is the bad guy. And I couldn't decide which way.
I got you. I just definitely, I think the moment he like had a couple of it, I think it was when he was like putting up the decorations and like some of the people were arriving. I was like, he was giving straight up like school shooter vibes.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, for sure.
Like the school outcast. Like I think it was when he was like hitting on Laura. And it wasn't hitting, right? Like he was getting her name right. And like, and it was obvious that she was with his roommate. I think the three of them were roommates, right?
I think so.
Roommates. And then it seems like the three of them have the YouTube channel because one of them has to hold the camera.
Yeah.
Right. And it seems like they kind of like alternated that task.
Kind of going back to purchasing the fake gun. I think that moment had me develop a plot in my mind of like, I've seen this happen enough times. I know where this is going to go.
Right.
I also had that moment of like, oh, this is a shady guy that they're buying this from. Like, I know how this is. I know where this goes. And for that to not even take the turn that I thought it was going to, I did, as soon as I saw Milk kind of have that same weird feeling about him, like I stated, but, I just, even then, I could have never anticipated the bad guy that he is.
Absolutely. Well, I think the first inkling that you get in the movie is when they're playing the round robin game, the like never have I ever kind of game.
Yeah.
And it comes around, has anyone ever killed an animal?
Right. Yeah.
And they're all like going around. And he says something about killing a cat, I think. But his reasoning is really strange, right? Like where he just like did it out of curiosity or whatever. And I will say this is like a slight tangent. I have kind of figured out, I think my favorite scene is probably kind of the retelling of some of those scenes. When you see those scenes like the first prank at Milk's party and then when Seven comes in and Milk confronts him about bringing this rando dude. And then when Seven comes and catches distraught Milk in the closet, there are all these scenes that you see that are like, you kind of frame Milk in this kind of like innocent perspective. And then when it comes back around later, you see them from Milk's perspective where he's filmed his own version where he's like in the closet, like, haha, I just got them to think I did this.
And
like, they don't know that this guy's actually working for me. And like, you know, I found that to be, those were some really cool scenes where you're like, wow, that was super seamless where he was able to go from my plan is working, I'm doing this great thing, and then like be able to, oh, he's coming, all right, come back in a character, oh man, I just like, you got me really good. I was about to shit myself, you know.
Does he get to explain any, like, does he get to explain about the killing the cat thing, or is that when the old guy knocks on the door?
It's like a really, I mean, I don't quite remember. I only watched it the one time. I kind of remember.
I should rewatch it. Yeah.
That's all right. We can rewatch it and like do other things in post if we needed to. But
quite
honestly, like I'm almost just remembering them going around and someone was like, that's kind of a weird question, right? And other people were like, you know, like, you know, no, or like I've killed a mosquito or whatever. And I'm pretty sure he says, he gets the whole thing out where he confesses and then they're like, why? And his answer is real strange.
Yeah.
And they even kind of pick up on it. Like, what?
Yeah.
Like, that's why you do that? That's kind of weird, bro. And but then you're right. I think that it is pretty quickly after that point that, isn't it, they just get a knock on the door?
Yeah.
That is such a strange scene. Like, what would you fucking do? Right? Your friend, get a knock on the door. You go over, your friend answers it, and some, like, old dude who's basically making a noise complaint then just walks in. Just super menacingly through the living room, kind of stares everybody up and down, kind of makes some rude comment, and then just fucking walks out.
Yeah, just does a full pan, takes in the whole room. Yeah, makes a weird comment and leaves.
Makes a weird comment and leaves. Like, oh my God. Like,
yeah. Yeah, and like that part right there, I'm not even joking or not even trying to like blow any smoke up anybody's ass or anything.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea this is the way that this was going to go.
Yeah.
And so when that guy came in, the tension that was being built with that, I was just like, what the fuck?
What the fuck?
What is happening in this? Because at that point now, what had happened with me was I had already created that plot line with the gun. Mm-hmm. And then the gun thing happens and I'm like, oh, okay.
Oh, it was just a harmless prank.
Yeah, it was just a harmless prank. Oh, it was real blanks that were in there, like that sort of thing. And then that old guy comes in and I was like,
wait,
so is the villain somebody who we haven't even met yet?
Yeah.
Like, and it's something to do with this weird old guy.
Right. Right.
That scene was so well done, well acted, and very unsettling.
Yeah. Yeah. It was a really good scene.
Should we get into scariest?
Yeah.
So for me, I'm going to say the scariest scene was actually your favorite scene.
Mm-hmm.
Milk's monologue, he plays that character so well.
Like, I can't even reproduce it. Like,
no.
That's the thing. It's like, it's one of those things you have to fucking experience. Like, it is really, really well done.
Yeah. He plays that scene so well that for a minute I was like, oh, he's actually insane.
Yeah.
He, as a human, outside of this character, is nuts because right. There's no way that he could do this well.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I agree with you. It was like, I didn't watch that Joe Keery spree movie where he's like also a content creator, but he's like, he's trying to get famous. And so he's like killing people in his like Uber essentially.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what this reminds me of is Milk so egotistical and like self-absorbed that he's like, this is the only way I can get famous. And like, this is how I'm going to get famous is like, because he obviously, I mean, based on that treasure trove that they find later of his that has probably at least 7-8 vials of blood in it, he's killed multiple people at this point.
Yeah.
Right. So it's just like, it's one of those things where you're like, no, he's just a fucking psychopath because he's not advertising those other deaths on social media necessarily.
Yeah.
Because I mean, and if he is, he's doing it on his own channel on the dark web.
Yeah.
Right? Like he has his own and he's just doing this on the side. Like I don't know. There, that's the only kind of disconnect that I see.
Yeah.
Is that if he, let's say he and Seven were in on it together and they were like killing people like on this, like on the down low. But then this prank channel was like their overhead. I could see that, but it kind of seemed like Milk was crazy all along.
Yeah.
And was just kind of like looking for an opportunity to snap.
Well, and the part where he is talking about how I wanted to make this my biggest kill, my most notorious kill, like that sort of thing. He's like, I think he even says something about like, not even like Gacy did something like this, or like there's a bit of a statement where he like does a little bit of a comparison, and then he's like, the ultimate kill is when you get somebody to kill themselves.
Yeah.
And that moment was just like, this guy is off his fucking rocker.
Yeah.
Like, in it, you can tell every little bit of this has been so calculated at that point to just manipulate Seven into absolutely losing his mind.
Right.
And
yeah,
that's supposed to be also like his best friend.
His only friend.
His only friend, really. And
yeah. Curious what like kind of started the whole thing. Was it the prank at the beginning? Because it almost seemed like Milk was in on that. Not in on it, but like he was doing all those behind the scenes shit where like he was unfazed by it. Like he almost, it was anticipating it.
Yeah.
And I'm just kind of curious if maybe, and I'm just speculating right now, where like Seven was planning on leaving or was planning on going a different direction with the channel. Right. And,
yeah.
And like, you know, Milk couldn't handle that. And so that's what kind of made him snap, because I'm kind of curious, why did he hire the dude in the first place? The old dude.
Yeah. Cause the only even little tidbit that you get of why Milk even has some feelings against Seven.
Yeah.
Is when he talks about how Seven had said something about like his pranks weren't creative and like that sort of thing. Like he had kind of degraded his piece in the channel.
In the channel. Yeah.
And but that doesn't equate to let's convince this person to kill themselves.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's like, yeah, this dude had like a manifesto to begin with, right? Like, because I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, I don't see an inciting incident, right? Because he hired that dude before the birthday prank.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I think, like, if I were to put myself in the shoes of like a duo that makes a prank channel and it was my birthday, I would assume something's going to happen.
Yeah.
But for it all to fall into place that well, he had to have known something.
Right. It wasn't just an assumption that a prank is going to happen on my birthday. He must have, yeah, I don't know, saw a text message or knew the guy they were buying the blanks from or something. Like, there must have been some other like correlation there, but
yeah,
I did think it was really interesting that, you know, they kill the old guy. Oh, because it's kind of like a bad, it's that's where it kind of like blurs the lines between is this a prank or is it not.
Yeah.
Right, because Milk essentially, he gets this guy, I'm totally blanking on his name, the older guy.
Yeah,
I want to say it's George, but I don't think that's right.
I can't
remember what
I'll
his,
look at it. Well,
I don't remember what his muscly son's name is either, but Milk basically hires him to you know, terrorize the friend group and then to come over and like drug Milk and Seven.
Greg.
Okay, that makes sense. I thought it was George.
There's Greg and Frank, and it doesn't have pictures of either of them, so
I think Greg is the dad and Frank is the son.
I think.
I don't think it really matters that much.
No.
But initially, Greg the dad is like, "I'm not fucking drugging you. Like, I'm not doing that. That's like horribly illegal, right?" And Milton's like, no. Like, okay, I'll drug him. Like, it'll be fine. Like, we're doing it as a prank. Like, it's gonna be fine. Like, we do this shit all. We do way worse shit to each other all the time.
Yeah,
right?
He says something along the lines of like, "We've already consented to this. Like, this is
He's like totally lying to this dude, right?
Yeah.
So he takes him out, he puts him in the back of the car, and he brings him out, and he pretends Greg pretends like he's gonna commit suicide, and he's like throws a gun at the both of them in between them. And says, "You guys got to choose." And I found this scene, like, before you realize that Milk's in on it, to be really, like, cool, right? Because you're in this dilemma, right? Both you and your friend are tied up on the ground. There's a crazy dude. He's got a gun. And he throws a gun at your feet. And he says, "Choose which one of you guys is going to die." And I liked that their reaction was to, like, double team, right? Milk throws the sand and then, like, you know, Seven grabs the gun and shoots him in self-defense. And then initially Milk is like, "Oh no, it's a prank. Like it was blanks. He's acting." And then they go up and they're like, "No, he ain't, bruh. He fucking dead." Right.
Yeah.
And I don't actually know if Milk intended for that to happen or not. I feel like he did.
Yeah,
right?
Cuz that's part of trying to unwind Seven.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
And so then he could just kind of like, he goes from, "Oh, we're just having a prank, bro," to, "Oh, now it's basically a, I know what you did last summer." It's a, "Oh no, we killed him. Now we need to bury him."
Yeah. So I guess it does end up being a Chekhov's gun. It just doesn't happen in the way you would think it would.
Yeah. It happens later on in the movie.
Yeah. It's not the demise of Milk that it turns into. It's the demise of Seven that gun turns into.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah. Absolutely. I do like that scene when, they're like, where are we going to bury him at? And Seven's like, "We don't have any shovels," right? And then Milk gets in the car and he's like, "Why'd you have to forget the fucking shovels?" He's like, they got to go to the store and, like, you know, they get pulled over by a policeman in the parking lot.
Yeah.
Like, oh, that was a pretty stressful, like, tense scene. Like,
that
before,
was.
Like, again, before you realize, like, Milk is in on this shit and, like, has completely orchestrated this.
Yeah.
I'm kind of curious because, like, he definitely didn't orchestrate them having to go to the store and pick up the shovels, though.
No.
I did kind of find that funny that, like, that was just purely, like, a, "Oh, we fucked up."
Yeah. Oh, fuck. Oh, I forgot this.
Oh, I forgot the shovels, and we're not going to use our hands, so we got to go to Home Depot at 11 o'clock at night.
Yeah. Which, whose Home Depot is open late?
That's what I fucking wondered. What hardware store did they go to that was, like, actually open at that goddamn hour?
Yeah.
In the middle of bumfuck nowhere.
Yeah, because I swear hardware stores are open from, like, 8 in the morning to like, 9:30 in the morning. And, like...
Accurate. Were we going to wrap up the entirety of how Seven commits suicide? It was just... You were talking about your scariest scene being Milk, like, not advertising.
It's really just,
like,
us finding out just how sick he is.
Yeah, and him, like, almost, like, romanticizing and monologuing it at the end where he's like, "I could come up with this really great prank and, like, I could have just hired this guy to come kill us or whatever, but, like, how great would it be if I convince someone that like I drove them so crazy that they killed themselves.
Yeah.
And like, how creative would that be? I think that's how he phrases it. Like,
yeah, I feel like the difference between the two of them is that all the while, Seven is looking at the video creation and the pranks as like the art.
Mm-hmm.
And for Milk, the art is the way that he's killing people.
It's like the torment.
It's the torment, the torture. Like the thing that he really loves is it's not, it doesn't seem to be like the creation of it. It's the feeling that he's getting from people having to experience these things.
I agree. I agree. And I agree with you because of that scene with Lara.
Yeah.
Because it seems like he very much takes pleasure in torturing people. And once he realizes that she was no longer capable of receiving that, like, that torment,
yeah,
to the extent that he wanted her to receive it, she was garbage, and he just had to get rid of her, right?
Yeah, and he still wanted the notoriety.
Yeah,
he still very much wanted to be famous.
Mm-hmm.
He just wanted to be famous for an entirely different reason.
Yeah, than this prank channel that they had like originally started.
And actually, that kind of lines up really well with if we want to go into ratings.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to see if there was any trivia, but this movie literally just came out, so it doesn't have any trivia.
Oh, I'll throw my little bit of trivia. To me, this was a very well done movie. Budget,
$3,000. Yeah. That was my only piece of trivia.
Yeah. Yeah. And I thought...
Peanut.
I thought Host was going to have a similar budget to this.
Right. I 1,000% agree with you.
Yeah.
Like, when I saw that $100K, I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
But you just got to think about the difference, right? Yeah. Like, Host was probably at least in part funded by Shudder, the like horror streaming service. And Milk and Cereal was almost probably completely done by those two dudes.
Yeah.
And their friends.
Yeah.
Like, I can't even imagine what did they spend the most money on. Because they, I think I was watching a breakdown of this where people were like, just imagine they had, it was, oh man, I need to give credit where credit's due. You know, they had all of the editing software already. They had all the cameras. They probably had all the mics, right? Like they had all of these things.
They probably had the car that like they drove around.
They
probably had the apartment.
Absolutely. Like,
the special effects that they use are special effects that are like they're described already to you, so like the special effects are kind of broken in the fourth wall sort of situation. So like you can pinpoint what they're using for that and be like, oh, that's this part of the budget. But even those special effects wouldn't have made a significant chunk. It's almost like out of that $3,000, the majority of it went to like gas and like just paying people for being there.
Yeah, I'm kind of like, curious. Like, I'm kind of curious if it was like a passion project where a lot of people worked for free. Cause like $3,000 is like, that's like nothing. That's like no money at all. I don't know how long it took them to make it. Maybe a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe a week at, you know, at the very least. That YouTube channel was Sinister Cinema Reviews on YouTube. They make really good reviews. But yeah, like I'm kind of curious how much of this was a passion project and how much of that money just purely went into like the sound effects or like the like some of the gore that was shown. But like even then, like so much of it was really just tension, was just Milk in front of a camera, just sounding and acting fucking nuts, right? Like there were several scenes of him just talking to himself or talking in his car, or
because like it is the budget for this movie is like less than most people's monthly expenses.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Right? Like, you hear $3,000, you're like, holy shit, that is like nothing.
Yeah,
like, absolutely nothing nowadays.
And they made a movie that's now going viral.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Can you imagine? Like, I hope that they get it picked up by a streaming service. There was, I think it was Sinister Cinema that was like, please, for the love of God, like put this out on Blu-ray. Like we need to give this guy more money to make more stuff.
Absolutely.
And actually, I think one of these times, if we wanted to do like a Curry Barker spotlight, I think there are like four or maybe even five other short like horror films on their It's a Bad Idea YouTube channel. And they're all fucking short.
Yeah.
Like 5 to 30 minutes long.
And I think he is, if not the main, one of the main characters in all of them.
In most of them, if not all of them.
And what a shout out to him. Like, what a unique set of talents to be able to embody a character the way he does, at least in this movie.
Yeah.
And also write this and
direct it.
Like he's playing every part.
Yeah. And he's doing it really well too.
Yeah.
Like I think it would be really, really difficult to direct something from start to finish and star in it.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't see too many people who do that, especially on such a low budget, but it could also make a lot of sense that because it was so low budget, he was like, nah, I could just wear all the hats.
Yeah.
I could just pull that weight. I don't mind doing that.
Please somebody throw money at him. Yeah, like, somebody. Please somebody throw money.
I mean,
at him.
If it doesn't, I'm sure it's going to really pick up traction after this point. I mean, like their YouTube channel itself is pretty popular. I think they have like over 500,000 followers. And oddly enough, if you go on there and you watch some of their other skits, they're like Key and Peele. It's like pure comedy, like sketches, which I find just really funny because like I find that horror and comedy go hand in hand.
Absolutely.
They go so well together.
Yeah. I mean, how many times just in the stuff that we've created have I said that like a shout out or a favorite scene is the one that has the comedic relief?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they do. They go hand in hand. It's all about timing.
Yep.
And the delivery.
Yeah.
And,
I feel like they follow the same cadence, right? There is a wrong way and a right way to do either horror or comedy. And if you do it the right way, you have like that push and pull of tension, but also release of tension the same way that like in a really good horror movie or in a really good like comedy set. Because if you just like throw the scares out or you just keep throwing the laughs out, then eventually like you can't ride that high forever. There has to be like dips and valleys and things that happen that kind of allow your body to rest and reset for the next like big scare or big laugh. And so that's why I think those they work so well together. It's always really fun whenever you can find like a really good horror comedy that works in both aspects. Like I used to really hate those growing up because I was like, fucking pick one. Be a horror or be a comedy. I don't know what to do with both of these where I'm both scared and laughing at the same time.
Yeah.
But now that I'm older, I can appreciate it more for like that kind of art style.
Well, and kind of two thoughts on that. The kind of like the push and the pull of the tension, calling back to Host, that bathroom scene is when they like pull back that tension a little bit.
Yeah.
And there is a comedic part where she's like, are you on the toilet?
Yeah.
Or like something like that.
You taking me to the bathroom with you? And
yeah.
She's like, I'm not going anywhere alone after that shit.
Exactly. Like there's that little bit in there. And that I think is one of the reasons why, like, if they would have just sent it the entire time, it probably wouldn't have gotten me as much as it did.
Yeah.
But they did give me that break. Like, right as things really picked up, there was a break.
There's like a little dip.
And then it was like, okay, I can breathe. Just kidding, I can't breathe. Like,
now we're going to kill everybody.
Exactly.
Just like in short business.
Exactly. And then with the comparison of what's the name of their YouTube channel again?
It's a Bad Idea.
Yeah, It's a Bad Idea. With the comparison of them to Key and Peele too, with like the other skits that they have, and then there's just these random little horror bits that are put in. Jordan Peele turns out to be an absolutely phenomenal horror creator.
Right. And like all of his movies have like a bit of comedy in them too.
Yeah.
There is comedic relief in like all of his movies that we've seen. Like I can picture like different points in them.
Yeah. And so it's like having this like Key and Peele-esque comedy skit YouTube channel that then one of these creators is like a horror genius.
Yeah. Comes out with this just so good. I mean, like, I haven't seen any of the other ones, but I'm assuming they're good. Like they must be as good as Milk and Cereal, or they're probably, you know, earlier renditions. Milk and Cereal is probably, it's the most recent work, so it's probably the best. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like Ari Aster started out with a pretty big banger, so
we should, we'll need to do a spotlight or something on him at one point. Either that, or I'm just gonna watch these like this.
Oh, we're
weekend.
Gonna watch them. Oh, yeah, we can watch them. Like, wait for the podcast. We should definitely review them on the podcast at some point.
Yeah, these might be because they're not like high def movies by any means. Anyway, these might be good projector on a big wall.
That'd be fun.
Sort
of
movies.
We can just do like a little marathon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's get into ratings. My weapon is a brick.
All right.
Yeah. So for quality, I'm going to say, especially knowing the budget for this movie and how pretty much all of the special effects are explained to you, like that fourth wall is not there.
Yeah.
I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5
for quality.
Yeah. Yeah. And I understand this is is supposed to be the quality of content that's being filmed for YouTube. The only correction that I could make to it is most of the big creators on YouTube at this point are filming in minimum 1080p, most of the time in 4K. And so quality-wise, they could have bumped up how this looks.
Yeah.
And I think it still would have delivered in the same way.
Yeah.
Especially since they give us all of the information. Like, they're like, oh, this thing is what creates the blood splatter and like that sort of stuff. It could have been in a higher definition and still done the same thing.
Yeah.
I would say there's still room for improvement, but this is definitely one of the better ones that I've watched lately.
Okay. So for what about for scare?
So scary. For scare, it's not scary.
No, it's more unsettling than it is scary.
Yeah. It takes you on a journey for sure, but it is a little bit more of a mind fuck, which I appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll say for scare factor, it's probably like a 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'll give it a 2. And that's even being a little generous. But like 2 bricks and then
2 bricks.
and then for rewatchability, I'm going to give it a 4 because I already want to watch it again because I think there's a couple of questions that I have that are still a little unanswered.
A little foggy.
Yeah, yeah. As we were talking about kind of the motive for why he wants to kill 7. I want to see if that's explained in there a little bit more and I'm just not recalling it. And yeah, it's an hour.
It's an hour. It's so easy.
So like,
and it's good too.
Yeah.
Like, it is really, it's a good movie.
It's a good hour. Like it doesn't, I watched this, I woke up early in the morning and Nick was still sleeping. And so I just threw it on the TV and paired my AirPods to it and was like, this sounds like an AirPod commercial of an episode. But I just like paired my AirPods to it and was like, I'm just going to watch it.
Yeah.
And it, an hour later,
you're like, wow.
I was right. Like, that was a good ride.
You're like, that actually, that was pretty decent. I didn't think, I believed the TikTok, but I had to see it to believe it.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think like overall, I don't necessarily think this was meant to be a scary movie. I think it was meant to be a mind fuck. So I, with that in mind, I think it rates really well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, I agree with you. I think, I was trying to think of what my murder weapon was going to be. And I feel like the options are kind of boring because it's either a steak knife or a gun.
Yeah.
Right? Like there's no other like creative weapons that are used.
Not really.
Not that I can think of because like Laura's just has her head smashed into the floor. The two boys at the end just die from the gun. And Frank dies from the stab wound to the throat.
Yeah.
I don't think anybody else bites it.
I don't think so.
I don't like the friends don't get it or anything like that.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go with the steak knife just to choose the more creative of the two. For rewatchability, I do agree with you. I think when I had first did my ratings, I gave it a 3.8 because I was like, well, now that I know the shtick, like, I don't know if I'm going to watch it again, right? Like, I feel like you watch it that first time and it really has, like, a really large impact on you. And I think the second time would just be kind of, like, filling in those gaps or just kind of, like, rewatching it for the sake of rewatching it.
Yeah.
Because it is so easy. For scariness, I agreed that I didn't find it scary at all, but it definitely was unsettling. Like, yeah. I definitely, the torture scenes were really unsettling. And even Lim, like, finding his fucking trophy box,
yeah.
Like, just that kind of, like, visceral reaction of, like, oh, lovely. It's definitely not the first time. It's, like, the seventh time we've done this. Oh, that's yeah. Really lovely. So I gave it a 3.5 just for, like, the unsettling, like, kind of, like, icky feeling that it left me with. And just because it did, like, it did feel as real as possible. Like, it felt like just any random, like, incel on YouTube just, like, making that content and just being like, look what I'm going to do today. I'm going to just, like, fuck shit up.
Yeah, it makes you want to download, like, a dark web browser and see what content creators are doing twisted shit on there.
I don't know if I'd go that far, but. And then quality, I actually agreed with you. I would give it 4 steak knives out of 5 because of that 3K budget, it was really, really well done. I didn't find anything to be like cheesy or corny or even like gratuitous. They showed way more of this movie than I thought that they would.
Yeah.
For not having like the budget. And yeah, it was a really good movie. Like it really, really was, especially for like it, I mean, it didn't have any advertisement because it's just available on YouTube. Like,
yeah,
it was really, really well done.
And that is actually something I took into my quality consideration too when I was thinking about it initially. Mm-hmm. Was that like countless movies that have even higher budgets than they do, when there's like a scene of somebody getting shot or somebody getting stabbed or like that sort of thing, they just pan away from it.
Yeah. And they then, cut away from it.
Yeah. And then they show the aftermath. This movie doesn't do that.
No, it shows you the knife come in and come out and the blood spurt out, right? Like, yeah. It shows like, even though the gun, like the gunshot wounds, like scenes, I'm thinking specifically for when they kill, Greg.
Yeah.
You know, like, sure, it doesn't look super realistic, but like there's blood on his shirt. Like, you know, they see that, like you can see the impact of him like falling over and everything like that. Like it looked good enough for what they had to work with.
Yeah.
Like, and I was surprised, like they easily could have just panned away, just cut away from that shit and just come back to it.
Right? Yeah.
There's so many other low budget films that I can think of just off the top of my head that did that shit.
Yeah.
And like you were saying, had the budget, they definitely could have like shown the whole thing, but chose not to.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is a really good like highlight onto the skill of Curry Barker, who I'm sure this is not the first that we're able to see.
Yeah.
But this is the first that we are seeing in real time of somebody that's going to end up being a really big name.
I hope so. Yeah. I would really hope that he's going to keep making stuff. I'm kind of curious if his career will blow up so much that he'll have to step away from like the YouTube channel. Cause like they post stuff like every week,
yeah,
like a new 2-minute skit or whatever. And like that shit takes time to make. So I'll be kind of curious, like if he dedicates more time to like making bigger movies. Or yeah. If he continues to, maybe that isn't what he wants. And he's like, no, I want to keep making these like lower budget, like smaller indie films for my YouTube channel. But maybe he'll just get a little bit more funding for them.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be cool.
I guess we will find out. But until then, have a good night, everybody.
Bye. It's always spooky.